Hello, welcome to Between Two Worlds podcast. This is episode number 35. I'm Luke. I'll be your host. And with us in the studio today, we got Ron.
Thank you.
And Anna.
Glad to be here.
Hi.
Gitch still has his baby Cameron. So he's not here.
Older brother Mason.
Gitch has to look after them. So
he's not looking after Gitch. That's my question.
I mean, Jasmine better be. Jasmine?
She's got her hands full.
Boy, yeah. Oh boy.
Three
oh boy.
Children. Mm.
She'll be ready to punt that boy back to work here soon.
Probably. And Dan Sparrow has the flu, so Ooh. He is throwing up.
Dan Sparrow
maybe
is,
right now.
Is sick.
He's apparently. Sick.
There is things happening.
Yeah, he's so sick that a rare thing happened on Tuesday night. And what that was, he did not show up for youth.
Like, he kind of has this Iron Man scenario that nobody, you know, can stop Tuesday nights from happening.
Exactly. Nothing.
Like wind, rain, sleet, snow. He's there.
Yeah. Except the flu, apparently.
Except the flu. Knocked him out.
Yeah. I
can't remember last time. Apparently his son puked on his computer and he got sick.
That's disgusting.
I know. Ugh. Only Dan could tell a story like that, I think.
Yeah. So that's why Dan's not here. But that's okay, because we've got a star-studded cast.
Yeah, we're good to go.
We're good to go. Mm-hmm. We got interesting things to talk about, interesting wisdom to pour out onto parents from Ron, and a little bit from Annalie and none from me.
Ooh, oh, there's going to be wisdom. There's going to be wisdom. I know there is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. For high school youth, Annalie, what are we doing now? Give a little recap. What's happening with high school?
We are into a new series for 2018 called Not My Jesus, in which we're talking about characteristics of who Jesus really is and what he calls us to do. We've had one campus night and another one coming up this week. Mm-hmm. It's Wednesday currently today, so that'll be tomorrow. And then next week we have our first core group of 2018.
Which is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting together, stuff. Small groups, always a really good time.
Be good. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Ron, how'd middle school go?
Hey, it was good. It's been a while since I'd spoken at a middle school event. And of course, having spent most of my, Thursday nights at high school, and then all of a sudden you kind of jump back into the middle school world and you realize how different those 7th and 8th graders are. And but a lovable bunch. We had a great time. Just lots of energy. Heather did a great job of filling in there for Danny. And
how did Levi do?
Levi, he wasn't, I would say, his himself. Like, he got on stage and didn't do a lot of talking. And whereas normally he would be bantering, there wasn't a lot of banter. There's a little bit of banter, but he was more of a sidekick yesterday, I would
Whoa.
Say.
Oh, yeah. Sidekick to Heather?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Heather was the main event. And Levi,
I cannot wait till Levi, the intern, hears this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, Heather shined. She had the shine.
Wow.
Boy, she
did. Wow.
Yep.
That's, man, that's going to be hurt Levi's feelings.
Oh, well. It's an internship. He's got to grow. Take a hit and get up. Do something about it.
That's good. That's good. We all need to be humbled once in a while.
That was good. But it was a good night, though. I thought, overall, you got 120 or so middle schoolers. And, you can get them quietened down enough to hear the gospel and hear the word and
good
and have a good response. It's good.
Awesome. Awesome. So we're going to start off with my favorite thing. I love hearing, here's the thing, but this week, it's my turn. It's my turn for here's the thing. Okay. So I'm introducing myself for here's the thing.
You've got a here's the thing.
I got a here's the thing. I got one that gets me going. Ooh. It gets me going because I don't do this and I see other people do it and it just grinds my gears. I call the segment Grinds My Gears too. Like, it's here's the thing, grinds my gears. I don't know. And what it is, it has to do with social media. It's Facebook. Facebook rants. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, I go onto Facebook. I use Facebook for like two things. One, communicate with youth kids. And that's my priority. And then my second thing is I look up videos. I follow Tasty. I watch some food recipes. I watch some sports bloopers. And sometimes I get the news. But what I don't want is people, it just drives me crazy seeing all their opinions plastered on Facebook, and then they get in Facebook arguments. And then that's just what my newsfeed is someone says something controversial on Facebook and thinks, hey, this is the best way to convert people to my ideas, mm-hmm. is I'm going to put them on Facebook and show how everyone else is wrong and I'm right. Or I'm going to post a controversial article and then we're going to have a great discussion. But usually the discussion is awful. It's poorly worded because you're missing out on so many factors of communication because you're just typing. There's no emotion unless you use a lot of exclamation marks. But it just drives me nuts. I just can't. I can't take it. I want to delete Facebook because of that.
Good.
Is seeing all those rants on there. People I think just criticizing other people and saying you're dumb, you're stupid, or whatever.
And then you got to figure out: do I wade into this?
Exactly.
You know, because then I'll be seen as this, even though I would agree or disagree. I mean, you can't put your name in that hat because like this, you will be viewed as
This is for liberal Christians and conservative Christians. Yeah, I see conservative Christians. I see stuff that they post that I agree with, and then all the negative comments about them come in and I want to defend, but I'm just like, this is an awful place to do this.
Yeah.
So moral of the story, I mean, just stay out.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and it's one thing to be political upon that. And then other people use it for a personal platform too of something bad happened to me or whatever.
And
then they rant about this person or, you know, an event or things like that. And then people are supposed to come alongside and, you know, console kind of agree and console and all that kind of stuff. And you're looking, and then I think, oh, I don't care. So I know sometimes you feel bad because you look at these people and do they actually need me to enter into their life right now?
This is how they're looking for,
you know, help. And I go, yeah, I can't
through Facebook
do it.
And I'm just like, but then you think about it, they have no one else.
I know.
That's sad.
And then there's, you do see the advice some people do get. And you go, oh my
goodness.
That's
bad advice. I hope they don't follow that.
You know, no, I know. It is obviously that's one of those things on social media that has become open season for everyone. And, you know, and you have all these feeds from different places of left politics to right politics to everything in between. Yeah. And then people, oh, I knew it. This is what these guys believe. Or I hate this about them. And,
You
know, and then they start, you know, then there's pot shots at, you know, political parties. And
but do you know what I am hooked on when I see on Facebook? For some reason, Facebook is a thriving community for conspiracy theory videos.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They're everywhere.
I've not been a part of that, apparently.
Oh, yeah. It gets me hooked.
Conspiracy videos.
Oh, yeah. Conspiracy theories on video. They'll swoop me right in. I'll watch
it. They have their theory. They'll throw a video out there and say, this video, and
they'll
this
say,
is good. No.
Like,
this is really what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Gets me hooked.
Well, it all started with JFK, didn't it?
Oh, well, exactly. That's
where this all began. Yeah. Well, of course, they're trying to figure that out with Hitler now, too. There's all kinds of, you know, that he's probably still alive, probably.
He's in Paraguay,
Yeah, he's somewhere in South America.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he's got tunnels that go from one end of the ocean to the other end.
Man, wow. Yeah. So
all right,
here's the thing. That's just my little nugget of fun. But we're going to get started into our topic. And our topic today is sort of like helicopter parents. So where this started was I was watching an episode of Black Mirror. If you haven't seen Black Mirror, it's very strange. I don't recommend it for teenagers, but for parents I do. It's very interesting. They take certain things in our world today and just put them on steroids. So they do. They have an episode of Instagram basically on steroids, is that you have your phone with you and it uses Bluetooth or something that it can connect with everybody around you. So I walk past Ron, and if Ron made me mad, I can pull up his profile and be like, Ron made me mad. I'll give him 2 stars out of 5. And then his overall ranking will come down. And if your ranking is high enough, you get into special clubs, you get more money, you can live in a better home.
Wow.
All kind of things. And if your ranking sucks, you live in the poor area, you don't get as much money, all this kind of stuff. So that's an example. So one of these episodes is called Archangel. And in this episode, Archangel, this little girl, she's at the park with her mom and she disappears because she's following a cat. And the mom freaks out. Where's my daughter? Where's my daughter? Where's my daughter? Can't find her daughter. Gets the whole neighborhood looking. Eventually finds her daughter. No harm done. Then she gets so nervous about this that she takes her daughter, this is when she's like five, to the special place to get a chip inserted into her mind so that it's a GPS, but also she can see whatever her daughter is seeing. So she has a tablet, and on this tablet are her daughter's eyes, basically. So whatever her daughter is looking at, she can see it. So if her daughter goes for the cookies and starts to take more than one, she can look at it and be like, oh, hey, hey, only to one cookie only. So she can see. But not only this, but she can also blur out, it's called parental mode. So if she sees anything inappropriate, the chip in her brain will tell her that's inappropriate and blur out the whole image. So at one point, she puts this parental mode on and her grandpa is having a stroke and he falls on the ground, is having this stroke, and the daughter is just looking confused because all she sees is a giant blur and she's like, what's happening to grandpa? She doesn't know. She can't hear anything because it mutes him as well because it's seen as parental guidance. So she grows up and she becomes rebellious because she's just been monitored her whole life. Then the mother takes off the parental thing on her eyes. And then eventually the daughter starts lying to the mom and then she goes somewhere she shouldn't have. The mom turns back on the archangel that she turned off. And then that becomes in a lot of deception and lying, which eventually ends in the daughter running away from home. And so I bring this up because it was obvious that this mother was too protective of her daughter, that she just did not trust her, that she was not okay with the daughter making mistakes, that she was a helicopter parent, or as we're going to probably find out from Ron, a lawnmower parent.
Oh, well, that little story you had there, I mean, that obviously brings helicoptering parenting to a whole new level.
Yeah, but wouldn't some parents, if they could, they'd put a chip into their kid's brain so they could know where they are at all times. And they'd love to be able to see what their child sees.
Well, maybe we should define helicopter parenting.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously, I mean, we hear that term and you can think about a helicopter, you think about hovering.
Hovering.
You know, and, you know, obviously in close proximity, all those kind of things. But a couple of things that it says, it's involved as over-involvement in a child's life, including making important decisions for them, solving their problems, intervening for them in their conflicts. And probably, you know, as you mentioned, the new norm of lawnmowering parents is taking helicoptering parents and taking it to a new level where parents kind of blaze the way. They kind of prevent things from happening to their kids because they're one step ahead of them. You know, that kind of thing. And that's what this new era of lawnmowering parents. So you're one step ahead of your kids. You're preparing them for everything. And so that they don't ever have to navigate any of this because you've blazed a trail for them and therefore lawnmower parents, you know. But, I mean, we're here to talk about, obviously, the helicopter parents and we'll touch on. I mean, I would just say that lawnmower parents is just an extended level of being of helicopter parents.
Yeah, I think the lawnmower is actually more so involved and maybe too involved. And I'd say this Archangel thing that I was talking about absolutely. Is much more lawnmower, much more controlling.
There is actually an app that I heard about called Mama Bear.
Wow.
And so you would load that onto your child's phone and that Mama Bear app obviously connects with everything that hits your child's phone, from Instagram to Facebook messages, all of those things are being channeled back to your mother. So you know where they are. You know who's talking to them. You actually would know what's being said. So you can imagine.
Oh, wow.
Like no teen ever would be happy with that.
No.
No. But there are apps and it is gaining momentum. I just did some research on this and there was, I think, 100,000 that were just were using that and they were spending another $1 million on this app to, you know, get it out there. So I haven't looked at it, but I just did some research just before getting on here that the Mama Bear app. But
that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with this is What does it look like for a parent to be too involved? Is there such a thing as a too involved parent? Like they're involved too much, they're controlling too much. Is there such a thing?
Well, I definitely believe. I mean, you know, I would say that things have changed over the years.
Yeah. No longer is the time where you can drop your kid off the mall and say, hey,
yes,
I'll pick you up in 5 hours.
Yeah.
No or longer.
You're on your
that,
own. Because don't even drop them off.
Is that how it was for you? How was it for you growing up with earning responsibility and freedom?
Well, we grew up kind of out in the countryside when we were younger. So actually, like, we just spent 5 hours running around the fields, not like in the mall. But I mean, we were trusted to not get into anything out there.
A good point on that.
We weren't in the city really doing stuff. I mean, we were in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. We could be gone for hours and no one concerned about us.
Yeah. You'd say to your mom or dad, like, hey, I'm going to play at my friend's house.
Yeah.
And I'll be back for.
Yeah, we'll be back at dinner. Like, what's dinner?
Or, exactly.
We're taking the dogs out and we're going out into mm-hmm. the park and the forest. And
Yeah. I mean, that's what we would do when I was growing up. I remember growing up in Saskatchewan and I'd be like, hey, mom, dad, I'm going over to this kid's house. Mm-hmm. Until dinner.
Yeah.
And then maybe I'd come home and be like, hey, I'm going to dinner. And I feel like that was like, I don't know, you guys never came over and checked on me.
No.
You guys just let me go. And now in my like age, I feel like that might be weird.
Mm-hmm.
That like, wait, I have no ability to contact you. Like, mm-hmm. like now that's weird for kids to be like, to have that freedom, to have that.
Well, I remember when we started giving out cell phones mm-hmm. to you guys. Well, the reason to give out that cell phone was what?
For emergencies.
Emergencies.
And, like, let us know where you're at.
When you arrived.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things, too.
Was it?
Yeah. When you arrived at a place, you were to call. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was also we had a little more freedom is that call us when you want to be picked up.
That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm. So it was like it wasn't like a set time limit.
I think when you started driving, though, we needed to know, okay, did you arrive there?
Yeah, that's what it was for us. We
I don't remember that.
Yeah, you probably need to call me.
We didn't have cell phones until we drove. Yeah.
But I think what you have to establish that helicopter parenting, it comes from parents don't want to. I think most parents would say, I don't want to overparent, but I don't want to underparent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they're going to fall someplace, they're going to probably fall in today's world on the overparent.
They'd rather overparent. Okay.
And you know, because we grew up, I mean, if you grew up and like, if you remember that those times in Saskatchewan, you could just walk out the door and go see your friend, you know, across the way or whatever. Perfect. Well, think about me growing up where I was free to do anything, anywhere, anytime, any place. Mm-hmm. I remember walking to school and it was a long ways. We cut across a graveyard, busy streets, all those kind of things on our own.
At what age?
That's grade one.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you know? When I was in grade one, I walked what? How far was away?
You were about three blocks from school.
Three blocks from school.
Yeah. And you did it by yourself.
I said, no, mom, I'm not holding
your
hand anymore.
That's right. You did say that. Your mother is deeply offended by that.
My mom came home and cried.
She says, I'm no longer necessary.
Oh, no. I am a grown man at grade one.
Yeah. So maybe the question is what is the purpose of a helicopter parent? Like, what are parents trying to accomplish by helicoptering?
Yeah.
Like, what would you think?
They want the best for their kids.
Exactly.
They want to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of real dangers mm-hmm. in the world. I mean, even when you're mentioning this Mama Bear app, I'm like, there's a lot of valid reasons you'd want that app on your kid's phone.
Sure.
Because these kids are doing stuff on their phones and you have no idea.
Exactly.
And like, we know there's apps out there that parents have no idea about.
That's right.
That teens are on. I don't even know what half the apps mm-hmm. are. Mm-hmm. And so like, they're doing it for a good purpose, but I think there's also that trying to find that balance of when does your kid go from being a child who you do need to be mm-hmm. a lot more involved with and make decisions for to bridging that they're growing into a teenager and into adulthood. They need a little bit more space to grow and to risk things. And
so where do you think, what are parents helicoptering their kids on? What types of things?
I'd say they're helicoptering over time.
Okay. For what?
In general, just their kids' time, what they do, that they're pulling their kid in and being like, you have to be with us all the time. You have to be safe with us all the time. I even read in this iGen book that it is unlikely, or when kids go out to the movies in high school, this is high school age kids, they will bring a parent along. So it's their friends and a parent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever remember going to the movie theater with you unless it was a family movie night.
No. We'd drop you off.
You'd drop me off with my friends. Yep.
Yeah, but we would not go in.
No, you would not go in. But now it is uncommon for parents to give that responsibility and freedom to their kids. At least one parent usually goes with them into anything, the mall or to games or just to anything in general. And so I think it's much more hands-on parent supervision.
And I would say that probably runs into deep into the academic world and probably to the athletic world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you want your kid to succeed academically, what do?
You have to be on them.
You're on them.
My question, though, is with this, have you noticed a more influence? Since you're a college teacher, have you noticed more parents checking up on their kids or less or the same?
I know there's more involvement than I thought there would be, because sometimes parents will call us and find out how is my son or daughter doing, you know, which is kind of weird, you know, in some ways they're college students. But I think, you know, I think they do often release them. And what happens then is the irony of all this helicoptering has produced
backlash,
a bit of backlash.
Like, but when the kids are finally free to do whatever they want.
They don't know how to study because their parents have, you know, forced this down them, even done their work for them. Yeah. And all of a sudden they're there and they can't cope. And so a lot of times the studies have suggested that parents who have helicoptered their kids through academia, and when their kids reach, you know, the college level, their use of prescription drugs for anxiety and depression is on the increase because they cannot meet the standards of their parents.
Okay. Without their parents beside them, they don't know how to actually be an adult.
Yeah, exactly. How do I study now that my parents have now left me?
Have you also noticed that if a kid comes from a home where there's like no alcohol and for sure no drugs or like anything, like they were never allowed to go out with their friends, or they're very constrained to being home at like 9 o'clock, you couldn't do anything dangerous. There's no chance of them ever experiencing or even knowing what those things were.
Yes.
Like we would use the word very, very homeschooled in the sense that they don't know what other culture is like, other than the culture right in their home.
Right.
And when they find out the world is not like their home, have you ever seen kids that can just go the opposite way because they've been so absolutely.
I think there's a delayed adolescent development.
Delayed growing up.
You know, I mean, the autonomy, which every teenager does seek. We all recognize that we want to be independent.
Mm-hmm.
And when the helicopter is above us, even consequentially, if I don't do my homework, I will not get a good grade.
Yeah.
Consequently, if I don't get a homework, I'll be in trouble with my teacher. Well, my parents say, no, you're not going to be in trouble with the teacher. That looks bad on me. So even helicopter parents, they demand more of their kids. And you know what? They land up demanding more of their teachers and their coaches.
Mm.
Like, why is my son playing more? Like, we went through all of these, you know, skating lessons and extracurricular stuff and all these camps and all that. And he should be starting, you know, or she should be starting. And so we have raised the bar high in our kids, and we expect our coaches and our teachers to do exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've done then is we've created teenagers and these young emerging adults into, they're not as resilient as we thought they should be, you know. They can't pick themselves up off their college floor and say, I can do this. Mm. You know, they're actually very discouraged. And their dependence on their mom and dad is, I don't know if I can do this anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that that dependence is key in that they're not, parents sometimes are removing the opportunity for teenagers to make choices and then face the consequences of those choices, whether it's academics, okay, I'm going to choose to go actually hang out with my friends and not do my homework. Mm-hmm. And then, there are consequences to that, and I have to work through that and deal with it. And yeah, they're going to face it when they aren't with their parents, and the consequences are going to be bigger, and they haven't learned to walk through that and learn from them. And like the brain development of a teenager is learning about consequences and long-term things. Like they're starting to learn that. And if you're depriving them from the opportunities of learning it, then their brain isn't going to develop correctly.
In many ways, if you grew up with a perfectionist and let's say a mechanic or a baker, you know, like let's say there's the mom who could bake, you know, don't want to be, you know, sexist here, but let's say mom is the best cook ever. So daughter comes along or son comes along, wants to learn how to do that. Can't do it like mom. We'll do it together, but never gets to do it alone. Dad's a mechanic and this is how we tear this apart. But if you never give the kids the tools, you never give them the opportunity, you know, if we just say, I do, you watch, but, or is it, hey, you have the opportunity to be with me and to work this thing out. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something about that. And I think helicoptering, you know, when you're over, it's overbearing.
So it's more like if they're doing stuff together, like they're baking, and you're like, you got to do it like this. And it's the helicopter parent taking, no, like this.
Yes.
And they do it themselves without letting them make that mistake. What Annalie was saying.
Yeah.
And so they become completely dependent on the dependency of their parents.
Absolutely.
Instead of learning how to be dependent without their parents.
And I think what they're trying to do, and you know, remember this too, that, and I was reading this in some stats, that in 1965, moms and dads spent an average of, mom spent 54 minutes a day with her kids. Mm-hmm. Dad spent 16 minutes a day with her kids. That's the average, 1965.
So this is when you were growing up.
This would have been my age, yeah, okay? Well, you take that today and moms spend 123 minutes a day. Dads are up to 59 minutes a day. So I remember.
It goes from 16 minutes a day.
Yes.
You were at 16 minutes a day with your dad.
That's what the average was.
Is that what you think? Do you think that
was? No, I grew up in a farm, so it didn't happen. This would have been done research probably in more of a urban center.
So you were with your dad more.
Oh, yeah. You work on the farm. You have to be.
Okay.
Okay.
So, like, this is like they have a 16-minute dinner, and then they exactly, never see each other again?
If that.
And these are conversations. But I remember in youth ministry years ago that we would be ragging on parents. You don't spend enough time with your kids. Dads, you got to spend time with your son. You know, and I think what's happened in many ways is that we've turned this into kind of a helicopter thing. Well, okay, if I'm spending time with him, it's going to be beneficial. You're going to be the best athlete. You're going to be the best academic person there is. You're going to study. And they're thinking that these are good moments, but they're not necessarily good moments because they are picking them up after school.
Yeah.
They are taking them this way. And they're, and, you know, and boom, boom. And it's just, it's so scheduled and so regimental that it actually isn't benefiting the relationship. Mm-hmm. They might be getting good grades. They might be great athletes. But do you actually have a good relationship? And are they growing and maturing?
So what are some practical ways that parents can introduce their kids to responsibility? Because I hear high school kids being like, I'm not excited to adult. Or I hear people my age and a bit younger, a bit older, being like, man, adulting is so hard. And that what it means is it means taxes are hard. Paying rent is hard. Having to buy your own groceries is hard. Cooking is hard.
Doing your laundry. Doing your,
I have to do my own laundry. Like that kind of stuff. Like I don't know how to function without my mom showing me or doing stuff for me. So well, how is parents can we?
Well, I think if I'm doing this all over again, and there are probably a lot of things that I would change too, but you learn as you go here. But I think parents need to be leaders; they don't need to be mules. Okay, and what I mean by that is that you show your kids how to do it, and then you walk with them. So it's kind of like you're going on a trip, and Dad, you don't have to carry everybody's suitcase. Let the kids carry their own suitcases. You know, lead the way, show them where to go, but you don't have to carry them. You know, the burden is so heavy, I think, as a parent. We take on so much responsibility that if I just protect you, I will build a wall around you to protect you. And the intention is good, but we're not leading. We're actually retreating. We're leading in a world that is very, very culturally volatile at times. And if we allow the culture to raise our kids, it will. But we do not have to allow that. We can stop the culture, or we can enter into the culture with the gospel, with the truth of God, that I can be a parent in a world that seemingly has gone so far away from God, but I can teach my kids the things of God. They will have to own that themselves, but I have to lead the way. I have to love God, serve God. I have to spend time with my spouse. Mm-hmm. You know, here's the other side of that. I think if you ask a lot of parents, are you a dad or are you a husband? Are you a mom or are you a mother? Which one occupies most of your time? Most parents of younger kids would say, I'm a mom. Most dads say, I'm a dad. Are you a husband and wife? See, if you have no energy for each other, are you going to have any energy for your kids? And that's an important thing, because you just kind of pour everything into your kids. Kids, 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 kids. They get it all. They get it all. And then wait a minute. What's the most important nucleus in that family? Mom and dad. They need to spend time together. They need to gain energy and vitality from each other so that they, in turn, can bring that to their kids. Mm-hmm. But we have turned this into, I've got to live vicariously through my kids so that they will be the best ever. And no, God's called you to be in love with your wife, in love with your husband, to model marriage so that when your kids are there, they're going to see the same thing.
They have a good example of what exactly. It's like to be married.
Mm. So that GPA, is it important? Hmm. Being captain of the ball team, is it important? Getting a scholarship, is that important? You know, whatever. Mom and dad, your marriage is most important. Mm. Loving God and loving each other, mm-hmm. You know? And I think we get so carried away because, hey, there's nothing wrong with being the best mom ever, being best dad ever. But if you let go of your marriage, in the long run, the kids are going to leave home. You're going to look at each other and go, now what? We've kind of forgotten each other over the last 18 years or whatever.
Yeah.
So you got to be really, really careful in that. I think that's an important, but I think if you're going to be a leader, I think your kids are going to want to be a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Annalie, any practical tips of how maybe your parents did something really cool with you, or anyone in your life, something super practical that can teach kids responsibility at a young age?
I think simple things like even chores and being part of the family as a team. I think our family did that a lot. Our parents gave us, we've had chores since I was like six. And but it gave us... it also gave us like respecting each other, because we all partook in building our family and helping the household. And we were part of it together. It gives you ownership of, I'm part of this family and I give something. And so it also gives, as your kids grow up and they're teenagers, give them the credit that they can learn how to do their own laundry and they can learn how to maybe cook a meal every once in a while.
Because they're not, sucks.
They're, but give them the credit and the respect to say, hey, I think you can do this. And and it might not go well the first time, but they're going to learn. And then when they successfully are able to do something adult, that feels great. And they get to learn, and they can be encouraged by doing that and grow and experience new things. And it's not all on the parents to serve them. They can also serve and give back to their family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think a big one also is being responsible with money.
Mm-hmm.
Is, as a parent, you have to decide, are you going to give your kids an allowance? Are you not? But I heard this one cool thing was, if when your kid's a teenager and they're driving, is one, make sure they have a job. Mm. But if they drive a car, they have insurance, gas, maybe they need clothes, and just a little bit of spending money, tithe money. You give them like $500 a month, but then they pay you back.
Mm.
The $200 for insurance or the $50 for gas that's going to be put into there. And so you give them the opportunity to learn how to pay.
Mm.
It's nice, I thought it was actually kind of cool. And then I heard what Annalie, your brother, is doing with their oldest, who is 7.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to explain what that is? Because I thought that was pretty cool.
Sure. Yeah. Even from, that's little 7-year-old, my nephew, he is learning about money because he likes to collect coins and everything around the house since he was little. And obviously he's in the stores and he wants certain things. And so his mom and dad have given him the opportunity to, when he gets money, his allowance, or if he brings pop bottles and makes money, he gets to spend it, but there he's encouraged to save. And so what his mom's made for him is just a little box with three jars in it. And every time he gets money, he puts some into the saving jar, some into the spending jar, and some into the giving jar. And so he is given the opportunity right away to see that his money's going to go different places. And then when he goes somewhere, his money isn't, it's going to run out. He only has a certain amount, and he's gets really excited about saving. I don't know what he's saving for, but he's really excited about, I'm going to get to $200, and then we'll see where he goes from there. But he's seeing it add up, and then he sees it go down because it's all right there in front of him. So in his 7-year-old brain, he's learning.
Still learning.
Learning a little bit. That's good.
Which is cool. It's little things that you can be teaching your kids. And it's never too late to start teaching your kids about finances, about money, and about all that stuff. Because I don't really think the school teaches it.
No. Nope.
So parents should.
They shouldn't.
They should, yeah. No. Anyways, this has been Between Two Worlds podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or like you just want to talk to us, like just to let us know you're listening. I mean, I'd love to get an email and converse with someone. It's btw@northu.org. That's it. Tune in next week.